Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, Chelsea come within minutes of Etihad upset. A point's a great result, but should it have been three? No such luck for the women's team, though, as their long unbeaten home run is over. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. And well, that was a pretty successful trip to Manchester, all told, listener, unless you actually went and had to try and get back again. Hopefully you managed to do that by now. It's Monday morning. As we record, it's me, Matt. I'm here with two of The Athletic's finest. Hi, Simon Johnson.
Hello.
And Dom Fifield's back with us too. How are you doing, Dom?
I'm fine, thanks, Matt. How are you?
All right, yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Good weekend in the world of the Barclays for me. Premature adjudications time. Simon, what have you got for me?
Is De Sassi turning into Tony Rudiger?
Yeah, certainly felt the same energy, didn't it, with all those celebrations. Mine, I'm going to say maybe we do miss Sam Kerr after all. That's going to be mine. It's not exactly a hot take, is it? But it's certainly a pertinent one. Dom, I've sprung this upon you, so I'm excited to hear what you've got.
I'll veer into the slightly weird territory of Manchester City. That was the first time this season that I've thought to myself, Manchester City will not win the Premier League this season.
All right, who's going to win it then if they don't?
Chelsea's opponents this weekend.
All right. Rather feel like the extent of Diogo Jota's injury might play quite a significant part of that. We shall see. Certainly looks like he's a doubt for the cup final. Maybe Nunez, maybe Curtis Jones, maybe Trent too. It's all looking good as we build up to Wembley. And Chelsea prepared for that game in the best possible way, almost. We'll look back on events at the Etihad next.
Jackson with the layoff to Palmer. And Palmer sets Nicholas Jackson away. It's Sterling he's aimed for. It's Sterling he's found. And Raheem Sterling finds the net for the second time this season against Manchester City. It's all the way through to Kyle Walker this time. And now Rodri! City alive in this game again.
I think today, again, I think for me the best team on the world and showed this type of performance. I think we need to feel very proud. I congratulate the player on the end of the game, because I think we were so brave and always singing and try to win the game.
So it's Manchester City 1, Chelsea 1, Saturday tea time in a rain-sodden Manchester. Then the Blues ahead just before half-time through Raheem Sterling. They could have extended their lead, but City will feel they were worth a point. Lucy's mum and dad and Liam were all on hand. Out of those three, guess who sent us a voice note? The answer might surprise you.
I'm not sure if they've got a train to take home, but the Chelsea fans who are here at the Etihad have a big reason to celebrate. It's not quite as good as it looked like it could be with about 20-25 minutes to go in this game, but Chelsea have got a massive draw at the Etihad, a place where they've known only misery for pretty much 3 years. They were under siege here for long spells, but Mauricio Pochettino got his game plan spot on and Chelsea executed it to the letter from back to front. They competed against City, they were brave when they had the opportunity to be brave, and they actually created the clearer chances for 60-70 minutes until their legs ran out. They were the more dangerous team, despite the incredible firepower that Manchester City had in that starting 11, despite Erling Haaland cannoning away with that giant head of his. Chelsea not only survived, but they really went toe-to-toe with City whenever they could. They rode their luck at times, of course, but you have to say they deserved to take the lead when they did, when Raheem Sterling curled the ball just inside the far post past Ederson. What was Kyle Walker thinking, by the way? How many years have you trained with Raheem Sterling? You know he doesn't want to cut inside in that situation, don't you? But Sterling seemed to have the measure of Walker at Stamford Bridge 3 months ago, and he did again. And the other City old boy had a brilliant game as well, Cole Palmer. So, so good. His passes carved open Guardiola's high line time and time again. All of Chelsea's most dangerous attacks came through him. There was a cheeky little nutmeg of Julian Alvarez as well. The Chelsea players are going over now to their away fans, led by Axel Disasi, who was absolutely immense. I lost track of how many times he headed really dangerous crosses out of the box. He battled Haaland all day. Levi Colwill was excellent and didn't deserve to get penalised with a possible, would have been a very soft handball call with VAR in the final seconds. But Chelsea ran around and made it really, really difficult for City. They were disciplined, they were combative, and when their legs ran out, they ran some more. I think you could see Chelsea's level dropped off when the substitutes came on. Christopher Nkunku in particular did not look up to the intensity of the game and became a bit of a passenger immediately. But the work of Chelsea starting 11, their front three, how have I got this far into the voice note without mentioning Nicholas Jackson? Absolutely brilliant. I know he missed one big chance, but his link-up play, his layoffs were absolutely sensational and laid the foundation for everything Chelsea did going forward. Just a really good performance. Exactly the type of performance Pochettino would have been looking for leading into the Carabao Cup final next weekend. I thought before the game it wasn't about if Chelsea lost, it was about how they lost. I was far too pessimistic. They matched City in many ways today in much the same way that they did at Stamford Bridge. It wasn't as chaotic a game as that, but still a really good game to watch. And they've got something real to take back with them to London now, if the fans can find their way back.
And the answer didn't surprise you, did it? We got lots of tweets on the game. Michael said, that was really good for where we are. That was mature and the players seemed proud of defending. Lost count of the times Disasi was celebrating a tackle or clearances. That's great to see. Better finishing cost us, but fairness, same for City too. Great point. Andrew, we're a really good side when teams give us space to run into, as we saw in the first half. Second half, all about resilience and character. And Tim Rice, I assume not that one, asks, can the pod explain the near miraculous upturn in Chelsea's performance in the past 2 weeks? How can that hapless show v Wolves be transformed into the comprehensive win at Villa and the gutsy, skillful, deserved point at the Etihad? Baffling. It is a pertinent question, Simon, isn't it? Because before kickoff in this game, I was wondering, are we going to get Villa away or are we going to get Liverpool away? And it was a very, very sort of stoic, measured, as Liam said, tactically spot on performance for the most part. Where's this come from?
Well, I think you have to put it into context of the two previous results away from home. I think that's definitely generated some confidence, some self-belief, which helped. Two different kind of performances. The Aston Villa game where they were really good throughout the 90 minutes. The Crystal Palace game where they were terrible for 45 minutes, but came from behind, a rare achievement this season. So they actually did have some kind of mini momentum away from home, sort of by their low standards that they've set. And they've seemed to have found something, a team spirit that has been lacking for most of the season. Now, Pochettino brought his players together ahead of that Aston Villa game, although he continues to have meetings. But it does seem to be that they've found something. They've found a bond. They've found a unity that's been sorely lacking, especially away from home in adversity. Of course, Pochettino's also come up with a game plan, or has certainly ironed out some of the kinks of that game plan. But it's very encouraging. And look, we don't know if it's going to be enough to beat Liverpool on Sunday. It's still a really, really difficult task. But again, they're carrying some sort of belief into that game, a lot more than just a couple of weeks ago after that Wolves debacle.
In terms of the team that took to the field, Dom, we saw a couple of changes with Raheem Sterling coming in for Nonny Madueke, which I think we predicted based on Madueke's struggles at Selhurst Park last week, and Levi Colwill for the injured Thiago Silva. Few people, Christian and Mr. Plough amongst them, suggesting that the result wouldn't have been the same with Thiago Silva. He certainly would think that he'll struggle to get back in now, presumably, because as he and Colwill would be the preferred pairing going forward, would you think?
Well, I think everything that we saw at the Etihad would suggest that is the case. Although I suppose we should also put Benoit Badiashvili in there as well as a possibility once he's recovered from the groin problem I think he picked up later on at Villa Park, because he was excellent in that game. But we're talking about a combination of young centre-halves, basically. And, you know, the benefits of that, their energy, their pace brings to the Pochettino system. They also brought a lot of maturity at the Etihad. I thought they you know, they belied their years. I thought, considering, you know, this is Colwill's second season at this level, effectively, and De Zerzi's first in the Premier League. I loved the celebrations, as your previous correspondent mentioned. I thought that was brilliant throughout. And De Zerzi sort of set the tone for that with some of the, you know, the thumping of the earth and the punching of the air, and when he made that interception, that leap to flick the cross just beyond the far post when Erling Haaland was waiting just to prod it in, you know, towards the end of the first half, just summed it up. That reaction, it was that ecstasy. It's brilliant, and it's great to see defenders doing that. Colwill was more understated, but then later on in the game, as it was getting tenser, he too was getting involved in all that. And I thought that, yeah, they were outstanding. They were absolutely brilliant. They were brilliant as part of a very coherent and effective tactical plan that was drawn up by Pochettino to nullify Manchester City and make life difficult for them. And their contributions, well, they stood out. They marked them out as exceptional.
Silva's groin problem, which he picked up at Crystal Palace, may prove to be a blessing in disguise. Like, Pochettino had a very difficult scenario on his hands, what with Bel Silva and the tweet, you know, how to manage that situation. Any decision about leaving Silva out of the team would have had a Bel Silva tweet twist to it. Now, whenever he's fit, and of course, Pochettino's pretty much press conference sort of didn't really give any reassuring messages on that front regarding the League Cup final. He said it'd have to be assessed this week and taken on a day-to-day basis. But that performance by those two and as a unit has sort of taken some of that pressure to bring Silva back as a player off his shoulders, because he can perfectly justify the decision now by saying, well, look at how De Zerzi and Cole will play together against arguably the best striker in the world, although the best striker in the world didn't look like it on Saturday. So Let's see. I mean, Liam and I had a discussion about Thiago Silva a few months ago. We did a discussion piece, and Liam was very much arguing for the young centre-back combo to be phased in and Silva to be phased out. I argued otherwise because I wasn't sure about how players would be able to cope without him. But De Sassi has stepped up a whole nother level since I made that point, and now I'm a little bit more relaxed about famous last words. This, I'm a little bit more relaxed about Silva not being there. But whatever happens, we are seeing the last few months of Silva's Chelsea career. I'm pretty sure of that.
De Sassi's had an incredible season, first season in English football, considering everything that's been happening at Chelsea and the relative not turmoil, but you know, the constant sort of intrigue around that the team and the transition and adaptations under Pochettino with the new players. But I mean, he's played the most minutes now, hasn't he, of all of Chelsea's outfield players, and that is, I think that's an astonishing achievement for a young fella that's brought in that we didn't really know whether he was going to be a first choice. Even if Badiachile hadn't picked up the bad hamstring injury towards the end of last year, then you know, maybe he would have started as a first choice, as somebody that we knew about. But really, from the first moment and scoring that goal against Liverpool on the opening weekend, revelatory is probably going a bit too far, but he's looked the French international. He looks that good, and maybe the consistency of his own performance has sort of gone under the radar a bit because we've been obsessing about the inconsistency of the team as a whole. But he's actually covered himself in glory. I think he's done really, really well for a first year at this level in this division.
Yeah, and he seems to be improving as the season's going on, which maybe answers a question about whether Maurizio Pochettino is improving players as well. Another French international, Simon, who looks every inch the French international, is Malo Gusto. You made the point last week that maybe Chelsea would entertain offers for Reece James now, given Gusto's recent form. It was always going to be one of the key battles, wasn't it, him against Jeremy Doku, just as it was for James against Doku in the reverse. But it was a one-sided contest. Gusto was excellent again.
I'm such a tease, aren't I? You know? And I had to laugh as well. Within a few days of the pod and that piece on Gusto, I'm then told, not that I think this will happen, by the way, but I'm then told that Reece James is targeting a return to first team training within a month. It's almost, I'm not giving myself any credit here. I'm not imagining Reece James reading my copy and going, well, I'll show him. But it did feel a bit that way. I think Chelsea may have other ideas, but I think it goes to show that Reece is desperate to get back in. He's probably watching Malo Gusto and thinking, right, I've got a real challenge on my hand as Chelsea captain, get back in the team. But it was getting back to your Saturday and the context of your question, it was a fascinating battle, absolutely fascinating, because Doku did give Gusto a real challenge too. I think, especially in the second half, Doku really raised his game and was part of the momentum of the game sort of swinging more forcibly in Man City's direction. But he really stuck to his task and did well. And I think the only thing I'd criticise him for, and I know people sided more and aimed their ire at Nicholas Jackson more, but if he'd done the cross that Nicholas Jackson did for Sterling, a first-time ball across, then I think Jackson would have had more time to pick his spot. He still may have missed because it's Nicholas Jackson, but I just think the man of the cross, it was slightly behind Jackson and it gave Ederson a lot more time to close Jackson down. It's a really small thing to criticise him for, but I did feel that Gusto could claim an assist for how that chance wasn't scored. But overall, no, another great display. And yeah, I think the problem position of what to do without Reece James, whether he's injured or not at the club anymore, again, we're getting some reassuring answers from one of undoubtedly the owner's best buys since they took over.
Yeah, all of a sudden it looks like there's been a few decent buys, actually. We'll talk about Maurizio Pochettino and the game plan as a whole in a minute. Somebody who wasn't a decent buy because he didn't need to be, Dom, it's time for your weekly Conor Gallagher question. Quote of the season, I think, came after the Crystal Palace game when he was asked about running 13 kilometres in that game, and he simply said, that's far, isn't it? Yeah. It is quite far. I think he did pretty much the same at the Etihad on Saturday. I put a tweet out saying this is a good game to show people who don't really get Conor Gallagher, to which I got some replies of saying, oh, this is Chelsea being a small team, basically, trying to contain I mean, literally the best team in the world they were playing against. But yeah, I'm just giving you the chance to wax some more lyrical about Gallagher if you feel that he deserved that based on Saturday's performance.
I'm not sure he did anything that we don't expect of him now.
Stopping Rodri is quite difficult, right? He's pretty good.
Yeah, but that the energy on that was key, and the way that he shadowed him and blocked the passes into Rodri was key to what Chelsea were doing. But Pochettino, like Patrick Vieira, I suppose you'd have to use as the previous example, recognises the energy and dynamism that Gallagher brings, and it's not always just in attacking areas. It's part of a defensive unit as well. That becomes key, that effervescence, that energy, that the levels that never subside. He just keeps going, and naturally, he doesn't even look that shattered at the end of a game, I don't think, anymore. He just runs forever for you. The small club mentality thing is annoying. This is, as you say, this is Manchester City they're playing at the Etihad. I mean, good grief. Just have a little reality check as to where Chelsea are and where every team that really goes to the Etihad is. I mean, are we saying that Arsenal or Liverpool wouldn't employ similar sort of tactics when they go there? It's, please, just let's snap out of that. I just think the way that they approached it was superb. It was always going to be difficult, and you know they still ended up City allowing 31 shots or whatever it was over the course of the game. But I just thought Chelsea's general approach. Not many teams have opened up City in the way that Chelsea did. I think they had more shots on target than City, for example, in the match, 6 compared to 5. And when you look at the sort of the Raheem Sterling chance in the second half, close range, great save from Edison. The Nicholas Jackson chance. These are really, really good opportunities. And actually, I mean, my only consolation over a bruising 10 days of having the mickey taken out of me by members of this podcast for Gallagher's performance at Selhurst Park is that after City equalised on Sunday, the last team to prevent City scoring at the Etihad remains a Conor Gallagher-inspired Crystal Palace under Patrick Vieira back in, when it was, 2021? Towards the end of 2021, I mean, in a 2-0 win, and he was excellent that day as well. And he's done it before. He's some player.
And to follow Dom's rant and rightful rant about playing like a small team, people wearing rose-tinted spectacles about how Chelsea played at City in the past. Even the memorable 3-1 win under Antonio Conte, Chelsea were battered for about an hour until a sublime Fabregas to Costa pass changed the momentum of that game. Yeah, I just sort of think people sort of almost think back to the Chelsea glory era, which was amazing, and think Chelsea went everywhere and just battered teams. There were many times they set up in this very similar fashion to how they played on Saturday. And the other point I wanted to make about the sort of the stats, which now look incredibly skewed towards Manchester City. You know, if you look at the shots and the possession, etc. A lot of that obviously came in the last 20 minutes when Chelsea's legs really started to feel the pace of sort of being up against this ridiculous Man City side. But also there isn't a stat that, for example, Sky included, which shows really promising great situations where the final ball or whatever was lacking. I don't know how you could summarise that in a really small way.
Early moments.
Yeah, there were so many of those that Chelsea didn't take advantage of. I mean, off the top of my head, a Ben Chilwell pitching wedge over the top for Raheem Sterling. That doesn't show up on a stat, but that was a pretty simple pass for a pro player to make. And for some reason, Chilwell didn't pull it off. And like, who knows if Sterling would have gone on to score, given he looked pretty nervous with the first couple of chances he had. And this was before he'd scored. But again, I just think sometimes not that the basic data doesn't always reflect the other parts of the game where Chelsea made some good passing movements, but just the final ball was lacking.
Let's get on to the gaffer then. Liam said in his voice note that Maurizio Pochettino got his game plan spot on. A couple of people maybe disagreeing in terms of the match management. Matt Carter says Chelsea still had the chance to score before taking off Palmer and Sterling. What was the rationale for changing shape and basically conceding possession to City? Mark added, I think we went a little too defensive too early in the second half, needed to ease the pressure on the back with a little more possession. And Alistair wondering if Poch called for retreat too early in the second half. Simon, you're shaking your head. I mean, my answer to that would be, given the way the game was going, Manchester City were going to score anyway, regardless of what happened at some point. But it was Chalobah coming on and going to a back five. To me, it kind of made sense. I guess it's just, you know, it's much easier with hindsight to say, well, maybe they should have left the attackers on and they'd have scored another goal.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what's happened here. I've seen the flood of criticism and Pochettino being blamed for Chelsea not winning that game, which was ridiculous because I don't think people remember the flow of the game when he made the substitutions. You could see that the players were flagging. For example, Raheem Sterling, there was no help for Ben Chilwell, for example, on the left-hand side. His legs had gone, from what I could tell. And Palmer had also... Yes, you'd love Cole Palmer in for that, perhaps that one flash where Chelsea get on the ball and perhaps he might be able to do a bit of skill like he showed on Bernardo Silva, which led to the Sterling chance in the second half. But he had also become on the periphery, and you don't want Cole Palmer in the defensive side of the game because basically he doesn't really have one. So I got it. I absolutely got it. And also the people complaining sort of seem to forget that Nkunku was brought on, and Nkunku was actually part of the problem. Like, at the time, you thought, great attacking substitution, this Nkunku. But he was way off. His first touch basically led to a Manchester City chance. So you got to have some sympathy for Pochettino there. He made a very bold sub, bringing on Nkunku, moving Jackson to the left. And it just didn't work because Nkunku wasn't anywhere near sharp enough for a game of that magnitude.
Yeah, and you know, also if you're bringing on Mykhailo Mudryk, as some people suggested, he ain't getting much defensive work out of him. Certainly less than you'd get out of Cole Palmer, I should think. I wanted to raise Nkunku before we move on from this game, Dom, because he did look sort of lost, didn't he? And like this game was going too quickly for him and he didn't know how to impact it. And my mind went back to those Maurizio Pochettino quotes on him and Lavia from a few months ago. He said, they can be involved, but in which way, in which form, at what level? It's easy to say I want to play, but we're competing. This is a serious competition. After 6 months, like Nkunku, like Lavia, they need to understand, they need to be involved to train really, really hard every day. Are we expecting too much from Nkunku, given the goal he scored at Liverpool and that kind of poacher's finish he got against Wolves, a way to just come in and slot in straight away to a new league after a serious injury, or should he be working a bit harder?
I'm sure he is working hard, and we are expecting too much. He's played 317 minutes of Premier League football this season, in his first season, as you say, in this country, adapting to a new league in a team that has been inconsistent as well. It's no mean feat to come onto the pitch when he did on Saturday. And I mean, it would be almost remarkable if he picked up the tempo of the game immediately anyway. I mean, that's it's just not going to happen. He was almost there, I suspect, just to sort of a few fresh legs, but just to give City something to think about, a player that maybe they don't know very much about, haven't seen him much because nobody has in this country. He's just going to need time. His season, I mean, the moment he went down with the knee injury in the States, his impact at Chelsea was pushed well into the future, just like that. I mean, we'd seen the flashes in pre-season. Liam had written about them and you know, there was a lot of promise there, but ruled out for that length of time. And then coming back in the midst of a campaign, having to pick up the tempo, having to find match fitness and form and get used to these new surroundings, that's a big ask. Whether you're a £50 million player or a £100 million player, you're going to struggle on that level, I'd have thought. So I'm sure he is working hard to get this right, but I suspect that we won't see the best of Christopher Nkunku until next season after a full pre-season.
Yeah, agreed. So also coming off the bench with Trevor Chalobah, first appearance of the season for him, and Cesare Casadei, which was an interesting one, just had a bit of physical presence in there, I think. We also saw 16-year-old Ollie Harrison and Ishe Samuel-Smith amongst the subs. Yes, Simon?
Yeah, and just because you've made that point, it reminds me of something I wanted to say, which is, I think we also saw the injury list. I know we've been blaming injuries since day one, but Pochettino was kind of limited with the strength of his bench in what he could do. Yeah, I mean, Don makes a valid point about Nkunku's lack of minutes. That was Chalobah's first appearance of the season. Good luck, you know, defending against a Man City side sort of absolutely foaming at the mouth, trying to get an equaliser and win the game. And if you actually look at the equaliser, it's that classic kind of shot through the legs. Casadei almost gets there and it goes through his legs and then it beautifully ricochets off. Chalobah's got very little time to react and only sticks a thigh on it and it rebounds at the roof. I don't think any Chelsea fan can really moan about the result. Manchester City deserved a point from that. They had to rely on Haaland, as I said earlier, sort of doing a good impression of a Chelsea striker, actually. I think the header in the second half was the one that left me most open mouth because there was no one anywhere near him. Not like that in the first half, his header, at least Colwell would sort of just jumped at him and sort of did something to put him off. Cole was nowhere near him for that header. And he didn't just miss it. He missed it by quite a margin, given how close he was to the goal. So I understand the disappointment. It was a chance for Chelsea to win against City for the first time since the Champions League final. But I just think take all the positives from that performance. And I think there are a lot to take away from it.
Yeah, there surely is. Two good results away from home, back to back in the Premier League. Yeah, excellent response to conceding four against Liverpool and Wolves. So it's been a topsy-turvy time. Checks table. Still 10th. Was ever thus. All right, we're going to have a big show building up to the Carabao Cup final on Thursday. Next today, though, we'll look at what happened with the women's team.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Comfort, all close down, and Robs. It's Shaw, she's in! It's 1-0 to Manchester City! Another goal for Bobby Shaw!
Who suffered disappointment on Friday night. They saw their 22-match unbeaten home record in the WSL ended by Manchester City at King's Meadow. Bunny Shaw's first half goal settled it on a night where Chelsea struggled to create clear-cut chances. It means the teams are level on points and goal difference at the top of the league, with Chelsea ahead by virtue of goals scored. City, the first team since Brighton 3 years ago this month to win a league game at King's Meadow. Simon, you and I discussed on a recent pod about, hey, maybe Chelsea don't miss Sam Kerr at all. I watched this game and it quite quickly resorted to just lumping long balls up toward Ramirez. He didn't win very many of them. Lauren James was totally nullified and City have got one of the best defences in the league. So this was kind of worrying that this has happened in successive games now where they really struggled to break down Crystal Palace, managed to do that, but didn't create much in this game. Could have had a penalty, but there's definitely work for Emma Hayes to do.
Yeah, I mean, these games do happen as well. I think the fact that City scored is one of those. The team scores first, suddenly it becomes a lot tougher, doesn't it? Whatever game it's between, you know, but particularly title favourites, it's difficult. But Chelsea having to adapt to a new player, I think there should be some recognition of that they have to figure out how Ramirez...
And she doesn't speak English, so it's a difficult adaptation for her too.
Neither do I, Matt, really. So I rely on the patience shown by everybody on this pod. But yeah, so there is an element of getting to know someone. And inevitably, I think there's going to be you're going to miss Sam Kerr. I think we all always knew that. Obviously, the hope was that Ramirez would come in and sort of pick up instantly. But it's still a tough ask. And Man City are a really good side. And what it does do, Emma Hayes, I know, sort of gathered the players into a huddle as soon as the final whistle went, pretty much. I don't think Chelsea were under any illusions that this would be a walk in the park anyway. Even if Sam Kerr was fit, it's going to be another exciting title race. And it's a real challenge for Emma to go out on a high. I think that's pretty much... the message that Man City have sent. It's very good for the WSL. You know, if you take your Chelsea hat off, their domination of the WSL needs to be threatened on a regular basis. And yeah, I don't know whether I should say it, but another team winning the WSL is what the competition needs. But I'm sure Emma doesn't want it to happen this season.
We'll naturally concentrate on Sam Kerr, particularly when... You know, Ramirez looks slightly off the pace coming in and joining a team mid-season. But there's been disruption up and down this side spine. So, I mean, Millie Bright is being badly missed, I'd argue, as well. Hannah Hampton's adapting to life in goal as well. And I think it just feels as if the collective isn't quite clicking in the way it should. And it'll be in games like this against fellow contenders where... You need things to be working in sync. You need things to be moving in the right direction. And any bit of disruption just nullifies the whole machine. And City ruthlessly exploited that. Although I have to say, the last 10, 15 minutes was an absolute barrage on the City goal. And quite how their teenage goalkeeper kept Chelsea at bay is another story.
I think I saw soon after the game had finished, sort of discussions, you know, whether it was the TV coming from the TV coverage or the pundits, etc., suggesting that Man City are the favourites now, which I must admit, that took me by surprise. I think the favourites have always got to be the team that's been there and done it. Yes, Manchester City will be buoyed. You'd have to be. That's a really significant result and a significant blow to Chelsea. But, you know, these Chelsea players have been there and done it. They've got the coach that's been there and done it. I think it's a bit premature to be installing Man City's title favourites, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, Chelsea have only taken 1 point in the head-to-head from them this season. Remember, City finished the reverse fixture with 9 players. They'll do it again in the League Cup semi-final in Manchester on the 7th of March. Next game is not until the 3rd of March, which is away at Leicester. Another one to circle in your diary is Friday the 15th of March, Arsenal coming to Stamford Bridge. They pulled themselves back into the title race too. Plenty more on the women's team up on The Athletic. Our friend Jesse Park-Humphreys has got a big piece up on the game. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up to read it if you aren't currently a subscriber. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-18s continued their terrific form by beating Spurs 4-1 in the league away from home on Saturday. Frankie Runham, Rhys Russell-Denny, Tyreek George and Josh Achapong got the goals. The under-21s were knocked out of the Premier League International Cup by PSV in the quarterfinal at Stamford Bridge last Thursday. Ronnie Stutter's brilliant goal had put the Blues ahead, but PSV equalised soon after, and then they won it via a very dodgy penalty. The under-21s are in action in about an hour from now as we record. They go to Leeds. We'll let you know how they got on Thursday's show. Dom, you're one of the big bosses at The Athletic these days, so you're all over the content on the site. Tell us what people should be drawn towards today.
Well, I've had the pleasure this morning already to read a piece by James Horncastle on Victor Osimhen, which might interest Chelsea supporters, given the links to him for next season. He's had a stop start and a very difficult season at Napoli, which is maybe indicative of Napoli's rather slipshod title defence. So I'd recommend people read that, although I am very much looking forward to to reading what Simon is hopefully about to file to me on another Chelsea fringe player. He can tell you all about that, though.
Okay, I just want to say thanks for using the word slipshod, because I haven't heard it for a long time and I like it. Which player are we looking at specifically here, Simon?
I almost feel slipshod applies to me. the legend that is Malang Sarr.
Loads of people have been asking us about this, so I'm glad we're finally going to be able to provide some answers.
Yeah, so I've been investigating. I've been getting my Sherlock Holmes hit out of my wardrobe, and I've been trying to find out what on earth is going on with him. And I'm delighted to say I might be able to just explain the whole situation. And you can imagine there are two sides to this story. But I think inevitably people are going to read it, which we hope we're putting it out on Tuesday. Inevitably people are going to read it going, oh, you know, they're going to be very much anti-Malang Sarr. But I think you should sort of read it with a little bit of empathy for his situation.
All right, I'm looking forward to reading that. Last time he played was on the 12th of March, so it's almost a year since he's kicked a ball in a competitive game. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up to read. If you fancy leaving us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, that would be appreciated too. Helps other Chelsea fans find the show. You can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SO Cobham. We shall be back on Thursday, building up to the Carabao Cup final. Really looking forward to that. Until then, thanks to Simon, to Dom, and to Lucy, and to you for joining us as well. Catch up with you later in the week. Bye for now.
The Athletic.